All right, welcome to the Crez Files members. Adam plugging in here on Wednesday, the 15th of March, 2023, for the Reading and Observation podcast. This is a newish kind of podcast where I just sit down and cover interesting things, that's all. And it's kind of directed towards some of the Crez Files members out there who enjoy just listening to the podcasts for their day-to-day activities and work or trips or whatever, or being around the house. Podcasts are pretty awesome and a lot of people do enjoy them. So it's just some extra content that I do for the Crez Files members. You can find the Reading and Observation podcast only in the Crez Files members area. You will see it displayed in the ticker at the top of the website, but it's in the Crez Files members area. They're not as frequent as the Nightwatch podcasts that I do and the other podcasts, but they do pop up. And so you can find them in there. So just check here and there. You can also find all the other podcasts in the members area just for easy reference, as the website is a pretty big one. And it's easier just to log into the members area as a member and just see what's up. I hope you guys are doing fine. And as always, thank you so much for your ongoing support. It is impossible to continue forward without some support now, and exhausting too. So you guys are awesome. And today I'm just going to be looking at some more interesting content that I save and go through. There's plenty, isn't there? And there'll be more coming up. If you look at the carousel in the members area for the Reading and Observation podcast, you can see three or four in there that I've done. Go back and have a listen to those if you missed any. There was one that I did looking at Philip K. Dick and the work of him, and looking at the kind of dystopian future in his writings and everything like that, and did a podcast on that and just went through some really interesting bullet points and information looking at this man in his life, you know. So we're going to continue that today, get some articles from Dr. Tim Coles on this. Yeah. Where are we going? Dystopian futures and the work of Philip K. Dick. And the Special New Dawn issue, volume 15, number 5, October 2021. Founded in the aftermath of the first nuclear splitting explosions in the 1940s, the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists in a panel of nuclear and other specialists. Every year they estimate how close we are to Armageddon. They use a clock to analogize the dangers. In 1947, with the technology for global destruction, but not the means to deliver it, the time was 7 minutes to midnight. When in 1953, the Soviet Union exploded the hydrogen bomb, scientists at the politicized bulletin moved the symbolic clock hands to 2 minutes to midnight. The creation of intercontinental ballistic missiles provided states with the means of carrying weapons that could destroy the world. Last year, the rabidly anti-Donald Trump bulletin moved the clock hands to the closest they have ever been to midnight, 100 seconds. So the editor's note there on January 24th, 2023, the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists moved its doomsday clock forward to just 90 seconds to midnight. Much more likely than nuclear war is nuclear accident, computer error, miscalculation, strategic escalation, and etc. If we survive possession of nuclear weapons, and crucially the means to deliver them, what kind of future can humans in Western societies expect over the next century? In nearly 200 stories, including shorts and novels, the late science fiction novelist Philip K. Dick offered dozens of scenarios, some of which seem to be happening today. In the novel Dr. Blood Money, 1965, the anonymous character accidentally destroys the world in an effort to counter Soviet and Chinese nukes. Survivors like the limbless Hoppy Harrington rely on augmentation technologies to function. In real life, since the 1960s, the US Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency has been using brain-machine interfaces to augment human capacities, such as wiring armless veterans to machines to enable them to control robotic limbs with their thoughts. This technology will be used to design next-generation killers that can operate in harsh environments, including irradiated zones and deep space. Synthetic realities. What is real? For millennia, philosophers and theologians have it grappled with this issue. In this novel, Eye in the Sky, 1957, Dick writes about a multiverse in which half a dozen people are trapped as projections of their subjective unconscious. The novel explores themes of solipsism and the limits of conscious knowledge, asking how much or little we know about ourselves. Similar themes were explored by the psychoanalyst Carl Jung, whose work has been compared to Dick's Explorations of Human Motivations. Both dealt with end-time themes and humanity's inability to adjust to civilizational changes. Technology has augmented representation to the point where it is hard to distinguish that which is real from that which is modified or complete fiction. According to the UK Ministry of Defence, out to the year 2036, simulation and representatives will have a significant and widespread impact on future and will become an increasingly powerful tool to aid policy and decision makers. It will also blur the line between illusion and reality. Emphasis in original deepfakes pose national security challenges, as videos of leaders in compromising positions can be invented from whole cloth with ones and zeros and targeted at naive audiences to influence their opinions. Holographic projections could fool observers into thinking they've seen something tangible which actually consists of pure light. Such technologies can be marketed at pop concerts that resurrect dead singers just as much as they can for military operations. Some philosophers have abandoned the word reality when speaking in generalities because the denotation is subjective and vague. Yet we all believe that we are present in a physical world and that we are conscious. If not, we'd stop eating and drinking because food and hunger, etc., etc., would not be real. This too leads to more intellectual problems because physics suggests that what is physical is merely potential in quantum fields. Consciousness, too, is considered a hard problem by neuroscientists and psychologists because there is no scientific framework for investigating consciousness, just aspects of what we call consciousness. So in the Unteleported Man, 1964, Later Lies, Inc., 1966, Dick tells a tale of commercialized physical teleportation to an Earth-like utopia, which turns out to be an advertising ploy to hook unhappy colonists. In reality, the US Defense Department recorded the teleportation of light particles over small distances in the mid-2000s. The results do not appear to have been widely reported, if at all. Today's Chinese scientists are unwittingly feeding the New World War propaganda machine in the West with their own much better publicized teleportation experiments. Using virtual reality, VR, like the Oculus, corporations' headset. Facebook's Reality Labs is trying to create a metaverse of augmented reality in which users can be digitally transported or teleported into another's VR space. With reality under question, some philosophers advocate giving up intellectual searches and favoring spiritual ones to decondition oneself from sensory experience and just be. But here we get back to the circular argument. What is just being? Dick suggests that such questions can never be answered because of the limits of the human mind and the structure of that which we call reality. In A Maze of Death, 1970, Dick's characters talk of being prisoners of our own preconceptions and expectations. Dick's work was Gnostic, a broad term for those who believe that existence is a kind of veneer of a deeper, more fulfilling experience kept from us by invisible forces. Reality for Gnostics like Dick in an artificial construct, a kind of con trick at best and prison at worst, designed as and sustained by powers that cannot ordinarily be detected or defeated. Dick's novels concern themselves with anti-heroes who found themselves in situations in which the real them was indistinguishable from the fake them and real or fake others. Do androids dream of electric sleep? 1968, for instance, adapted into the movie Blade Runner in 1982, concerns human life in a society permeated with replicants who, for all intents and purposes, could be human. Although physically human-looking robots are a long way off, chatbots already trick humans into thinking they are real. The first successful bot was Eugene Gustman, which tricked a significant number of participants into believing it was human. Untold numbers of troll bots post fake reviews on Amazon. From this, we can ask if reality is unreal in the sense of it being someone or something else's construct, and that there is some kind of true reality, how much of you is real, and how much of you is the result of unchecked, unquestioned, and unchallenged conditioning. The conditioning can be from nature, limited consciousness, sensory conditioning, from other people who tell you what to do and to believe from infancy, and your own internalized conditioning that perpetuates the tricks and the lies. Anthropologists and sociologists call personality a social construct. In other words, if you developed your mind and personality in a cultural vacuum, no religion, no politics, how different would you be? But without social inputs, including those of culture, the infant brain does not develop. So we are back in the trap. You need input to develop, but are you the sum of those inputs, or do you have unique qualities? Is the uniqueness your true self? The politics of true self. The perennial philosophy is know yourself, but can the self be known in the contradictory circumstances in which we find ourselves? Corporations that seek to maximize profit and politicians who seek to control the public take advantage of our lack of self-knowledge. They use education, culture, propaganda, and fear to construct artificial personalities, turning us into a kind of replicant. In the film The Adjustment Bureau, 2011, based on Dick's short story Adjustment Team from 1954, non-human interventionists interfere in the life of an upcoming politician. At first, the audience thinks that these beings are political rivals, but spoiler alert, they are nudging him away from his soulmate to pursue the higher goal of self-sacrifice for the greater social good. In today's online culture, you are the product. The World Wide Web spins its threads in which to trap the surfer. Instead of doing work for the greater good, the surfer is manipulated by myriad institutions and individuals to follow certain paths and beneficial only to the manipulators. Brokers and ad agencies steal your data. We live in a performance for profit culture in which the self can be commodified in online spheres. Philip K. Dick's 19... This is a side note from another piece. Philip K. Dick's 1968 book, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sleep? Was adapted into the 1982 movie Blade Runner. The theme concerns human life in a society permeated with replicants who, for all intents and purposes, could be human. Looking at Facebook's metaverse, an augmented reality in which users digitally teleport into virtual reality space. Spend enough time in these manipulated virtual spaces and people soon won't tell the difference between real humans and the humanoid robots under development right now. One of Dick's famous quotes is, "There will come a time when it isn't. They're spying on me through my phone. They're spying on me through my phone anymore. Eventually, it will be my phone is spying on me. Today, the phone is life for millions of people, billions. It allows us to access emails, the news, take photos, purchase goods and services, surf the net, check our health status, and even prove vaccination. Dependence on technology gives intelligence agencies and big data endless opportunities to control and manipulate. In Dick's day, spy agencies would listen in through the phone, but today the technology inside the phone automatically passes data to the given agency. So cell towers triangulate the user's geolocations. Even when the phone is switched off, the International Mobile Equipment Identifier is a 15-digit number that identifies phones on a network. Phones also store user IP addresses. Apps can also spy on users. Angry Birds, Cam Scanner, DoorDash, Grindr, Ring Doorbell, Tinder, weather apps, WhatsApp, and Zombie Mod have all been found to be Trojan horses for the US National Security Agency and or covertly passing user data to brokers. Kaveni Digital Solutions founder Rafi Jafari says if you are looking for apps to delete to protect your information, the absolute worst culprit is Facebook, as well as its WhatsApp, Messenger, and Instagram. The sheer scale of their data collection is staggering, and it is often more intrusive than companies like Google. You know, people wouldn't believe it. Before, just bring up another one before the Minority Report. Here. From Michael Snyder. Now they can actually use Wi-Fi to see people through walls. If you truly wanted complete and total privacy, you would need to give up nearly all the technology that you are currently using. I wish that wasn't true, but this is the reality of the world in which we now live. The Big Brother surveillance grid is constantly growing and evolving around us, and those who are using it to watch, monitor, track, influence, and control us have an insatiable appetite for more data. They are constantly pushing the envelope, and most people don't seem to care. But if we don't stand up for our rights now, eventually we will find ourselves living in a society where there is absolutely no privacy whatsoever. In fact, many would argue that we're already there. Recently, I was horrified to learn that researchers have been working on a way to use Wi-Fi to look through the walls of our homes to see what we are doing. The following is a brief excerpt from the Vice article entitled "Scientists are getting eerily good at using Wi-Fi to see people through walls in very, very much detail." And don't forget, we talked about this years ago on the podcast, that the Wi-Fi and everything, all this stuff that the telcos are buying up, it's old military stuff, hardware, you know. Researchers at Carnegie Mellon University developed a method for detecting the three-dimensional shape and movements of human bodies in a room using only Wi-Fi routers. To do this, they used DensePose, a system for mapping all the pixels on the surface of a human body in a photo. DensePose was developed by London-based researchers and Facebook's AI researchers. From there, according to their recently uploaded preprint, paper published on AirXIV, they developed a deep neural network that maps Wi-Fi signals, phase and amplitude sent and received by routers to coordinates on human bodies. As we have seen with so many other highly intrusive surveillance technologies, those that have developed this method are touting the benefits that it could have. The researchers argue that their Wi-Fi approach to imaging humans in households could be applied to home healthcare, where patients may not want to be monitored with a camera in place like the bathroom or with other sensors and tracking devices. No matter how old I get, I don't ever want anyone using any technology to monitor me while I'm taking a dump. If that makes me old-fashioned, so be it. Sadly, this is not the first time the researchers have developed this sort of technology. Most people don't realize this, but scientists have been working on ways to see through our walls for about a decade now. Researchers have been working on seeing people without using cameras or expensive LIDAR hardware for years. In 2013, a team of researchers at MIT found a way to use cell phone signals to see through walls. In 2018, another MIT team found Wi-Fi to detect people in another room and translate their movements to walking stick figures. Did you know that cell phone signals can be used to see through walls? Neither did I. Of course, cell phones are probably the most comprehensive surveillance devices ever created, and the vast majority of us are willingly carrying them around everywhere we go. If you don't get what I'm talking about, perhaps this information from the American Bar Association will help you understand. Depending on the number of apps installed, a cell phone may send data regarding its location thousands of times per day. Indeed, some phone apps will share as many as 200 individually time-stamped location data points within a 12-hour interval. These data are sent in real time to multiple companies, each of which can track the phone in real time or retrace the phone's path by analyzing the logged historical data. According to the Times, every minute of every day, everywhere on the planet, dozens of companies, largely unregulated, little scrutinized, are logging the movements of tens of millions of people with mobile phones and storing the information in massive data files. Location data are collected by companies along with millions of other data points, commonly packaged and sold as marketing analysis to advertisers, financial institutions, real estate investments, investors, and other third parties. Location data are particularly lucrative to advertisers who use it to determine the places people frequent and the times they go to these locations. Nothing you can do on your cell phone is private. Declare your independence. Profit outside the rigged system. Protect yourself from tyranny and economic collapse. Learn to live free and spread peace. Ever. And your cell phone makes a record of every location that you visit, so you better not get into trouble while carrying your phone, because law enforcement agencies can use phone data to follow people's movements months back in time. I don't take any mobile phone out with me. It's an older style phone that I do use here and there, and obviously I turn the Wi-Fi off pretty much all the time. I don't think it's ever on, really. We really do live in a Big Brother society, and there is no going back. In fact, things will only get worse in the years ahead. Last week, I was greatly disappointed to learn that Ford has just patented a technology that can remotely control your vehicle. So Ford Motor Company has filed for a patent on technology that could remotely shut down your radio or air conditioning, lock you out of your own vehicle, or prompt it to ceaselessly beep if you miss car payments. Ford said it has no plans to use the technology contained in just one of the many patents filed by the automaking giant. Also, what they're going to be doing now is have these cars, whether hire cars or cars that you can't pay off the loan or whatever, that's what it's going to be like, where it will just lock you out completely and then internally it will drive itself back to a station area. You know, they'll to seize the car back. Still, it emerges at as a troubling time for car owners. Loan delinquencies have been steadily ticking back up from their pandemic lull. Cox Automotive data showed severely delinquent auto loans in January hitting their highest point since 2006. The use of the technology to aid repossessions isn't new, but the patent application is wide-ranging, even proposing the idea that an autonomous vehicle could drive itself to a more convenient location to be collected by a tow truck. There's a video from China as well where this lady gets sort of like a cab and there's no one driving and she gets in and there's a digital screen at the back seat and she pays the credits or whatever with a swipe or whatever, and then you could just see the steering wheel go off and it drives off, you know. So that goes on. A little bit. I've got some more of the other article to go through, so that's just a point. Michael's new book entitled End Times is now available in paperback and from Kindle on Amazon. So I'm guessing that's from his book there. Crazy Times, huh? We'll just go back here to the previous article, which is swiped away on me. Just give this a moment. We were talking about Philip K. Dick. Okay. We were at Minority Report. So in the movie Minority Report 2002, based on Dick's short story, society is saturated with advertising, from interactive ads on cereal packets to voice-to-skull technology that beams commercials into the heads of people passing by. And we talked about that a lot, that movie, you know. So there's a scene where he walks past a clothing window and the mannequin kind of faces him with a suit or a jumper on, and the message is beamed into his mind that this would be a good fit for you, this is your size or whatever, and this is the cost. How intrusive is that? Today, real-life adverts are targeted at the users, but data to refine targeted ads is sucked out of personal devices, creating a feedback loop. Today we live in a society in which spurious realities are manufactured by the media, by governments, by big corporations, by religious groups, political groups, and the electronic hardware exists by which to deliver these pseudo-worlds right into the heads of the reader, or the viewer, the listener. Dick said this in 1978, I ask in my writing what is real, because increasingly we are bombarded with pseudo-realities manufactured by very sophisticated people using very sophisticated electronic mechanisms. I do not distrust their motives, I distrust their power. Whatever is real about the human is being gathered and uploaded into myriad VR programs that benefit our controllers, but crucially make us superficially happy in the process, so that we do not rebel like the contended slave of Aldous Huxley's Brave New World in 1932. The military industrial complex is trying to ostracize the technologies of control to make them appealing to users. One designer worked with the RAND Corporation on the concept of Internet of Bodies, a biological step up the ladder of the Internet of Things. The Internet of Bodies. In this new age of bioconnectivity, Bluetooth-connected apps tell parents with their babies when their babies have shat, artificial pancreases send real-time data on glucose levels to algorithms that automate insulin dosing, and wearable attention monitors brain activity to track inattentiveness during scenarios like driving. Digital pills transmit biodata on reactions to ingested tablets. In the Three Stigmata of Palmer Eldritch, 1965, Dick wrote about the blend of VR and genetic enhancement. In our real world, the real is being modified at the genetic level to create new physical biorealities, from engineered babies to enhanced food, from gene editing to mRNA vaccines. But who benefits? GMO food is sold to international consumers as a cure for global hunger, while domestic consumers are often not told that modified products are in their foods. The human body has receptor cells 7 and 8 and shut down host cell protein synthesis, thereby preventing the use of certain materials as vaccine vectors. Modified messenger RNA enables the vector to escape detection, triggering the immune system to help the body fight similar infection. In theory, mRNA research developed into the 2010s, some of it with finding from the U.S. Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, but the untested on humans technology had no chance of being mass marketed until COVID came along. Pfizer, BioNTech and Moderna developed mRNA vaccines accordingly. So transcendence and control. So Dick also prophesies that computer use by ordinary citizens will transform the public from passive viewers of TV into mentally alert, highly trained information processing experts. But the price of mental alertness is addiction to screens. It is also losing our physical selves in a digital realm. The human is not merely a data processor. Humans themselves become data that unseen powers buy and sell and manipulate and use to create further synthetic realities. With so much online influence in the form of peer pressure, propaganda, targeted marketing and biosurveillance and non-physical interaction, what it means to be human is challenged in the constant environment of Internet of Things. What it means to be physically human is also challenged as unaccountable corporations tinker with food, vaccines, and even the cells that produce humans. Dick's characters, and indeed Dick himself, struggled to navigate this ever-shrinking minefield. Perhaps more important than outer modified constructs is the inner world inhabited by characters. Our techno overlords have not yet mastered how the inner self projects reality externally and how the external world conditions the individual to internalize their control. The latter fascinated Gnostics like Dick, who felt the glimmer of transcendence in the darkness of matter and synthetic reality. And just moving through this one from Jason Heppenstall. Is a little bit different but interesting, because we do look at entities and what is going on planet Earth and where we've come from, intervention here by some kind of parasitic demons or beings and things like this. This was an interesting article about Steiner and the blood demons. Is the human race under spiritual attack? And did the esoteric philosopher and clairvoyant Rudolf Steiner warn about it over a century ago, when he said a vaccine would be the delivery system for the defeat of humanity? For many, the overly authoritarian response by governments worldwide to COVID-19 pointed to some deeper, more sinister driving force. But it hasn't just been the governments that seem to be acting strange. Over the last 2 years, we've witnessed people across a broad spectrum of society meekly submit to draconian attacks on their freedoms, many even fiercely defending the assault. In the same way, we've seen politicians and parties who once ran on platforms of personal freedom and economic autonomy almost overnight turn into overbearing control freaks intent on micromanaging every aspect of our lives. How has this happened? Recently, the term mass formation psychosis has been on everybody's lips. It's defined as a psychological phenomenon whereby a mass of people voluntarily go through a process of de-individualism or de-individuation and a herd mentality forms. So individually they are, joined. So they're not an individual, obviously, anymore. And then this hive mind as it says, herd mentality forms. I like to call it a hive mind. Anyway, due to their contagious nature, the thought forms affecting these de-individuated people, catalyzed by the positive feedback loops of news programs, social media, and peer interaction, spread like a wildfire throughout the population. In the past, this used to be called mob psychology, or more plainly, the madness of the crowds. Psychology from science to the occult. Someone for whom the events of the past couple of years would not have been so surprising was the Austrian esoteric philosopher and mystic Rudolf Steiner, who died almost a century ago. Throughout his life, Steiner wrote numerous books and delivered thousands of lectures on his theories, contributing greatly to diverse spheres from the architecture to education and agriculture to beekeeping. His highly unique and sometimes controversial insights and methods led to the founding of the spiritual movement known as Anthroposophy. Which emphasizes the existence of boundless potential for human beings. Unlike some esoteric thinkers, Steiner was the great importance of materialistic science, but argued that it was vital to see it as only a single aspect of reality. Should ideally be combined with what he called spiritual science, gained by mystical experience, in order to present the full picture. After all, breakthroughs often occur when scientists receive insights from beyond the material realm, as in the famous case of James Watson, credited with the discovery of the double helix shape of DNA, which came to him in a dream. Featured two intertwined serpents, and similar, Dmitri Mendeleev created the periodic table after a dream of a table where all the elements fell into place as required. These cases go to show that not all scientific discoveries are the result of logical deduction and experimentation. In fact, Steiner, who had been on the receiving end of mystical insights since childhood, honed his clairvoyant skills to such an extent that the information he received from non-conventional sources became more than the occasional flash of insight. His quest became the establishment of methods for obtaining objective extrasensory perception, a task he considered of paramount importance, for he believed an epic battle was being fought in the spiritual realm that would have disastrous consequences for mankind unless it was addressed head-on. The spirits of darkness. His clearest writings about the future fate of humanity came in a series of lectures delivered towards the end of his life in Dornach, Switzerland. These lectures are reproduced in the book The Fall of the Spirits of Darkness. Although Steiner's detractors say his prose can be leaden, his lectures meandering and his concepts difficult to grasp, he is remarkably clear and straightforward when it comes to the fate that awaits humanity. if our obsession with scientific materialism is allowed to reign free without being pulled back into balance by the counterbalancing forces of spirituality. This is most clearly illustrated in the final two lectures in the series 13 and 14, which are respectively titled The Fallen Spirit's Influence in the World and Into the Future. Steiner posits that an unseen battle took place in the early 19th century, which certain spirits of darkness lost. These spirits were duly ejected from their heavenly realms and cast down into a more material plane of existence, i.e. here. He is remarkably precise about when this occurred, autumn in 1879. These newly arrived spirits joined those who were already here, the ones that have been existing alongside and influencing humanity since the mythological times associated with the fall. Given that it takes time for these malign spirits to work their way through human societies, it wasn't until 1914 that their malign influence manifested in human society in the form of the First World War, a disastrous event, the cause of which still puzzles secular historians. Lucifer and Ahriman, the leaders of the pack. The spirits Ahriman and Lucifer have been hacking humanity for thousands of years, says Steiner, with Lucifer being the light bringer, intent on making us more spiritual and granting us more free will, and Ahriman doing the opposite and making us more materialistic and easier to control through the ego, I'm assuming. In simplistic terms, Lucifer is an ascending influence while Ahriman is a descending one. Why should they want to do this? Well, we just don't know. It's difficult for our human minds to figure out what makes angels and demons tick. But whenever there's one of these periodic battles in the spirit world, Steiner said it tends to result in a new batch of reinforcements being thrown down into the material realm to join forces with those already here. Steiner told us that Ahriman, a demon first identified by the Zoroastrians in ancient Persia, has the upper hand right now. He had a personal beef with Ahriman and had been seen his face in a vision. In fact, he was still carving a likeness of it out of wood at the time of his death. Ahriman's main aim seems to be to drag humankind into a purely materialistic state devoid of any form of spirituality, removing even the impulse to connect with our souls. The method of attack would be through science and technology and by taking possession of the minds of powerful and influential people in order to push through this agenda. These controlled people could be scientists, politicians, religious leaders, or anyone with any influence. Thus, demonic forces would work through these people and the people themselves, blinded by all too human failings, such as greed or lust or power, would lack the basic awareness to recognize what was occurring. A new religion for the new age. The background to this power grab was the rise of atheism and the worship of science and progress. Now we have a situation in which a purely materialistic perspective is presented as the only explanation for all creation. Atheism has become a de facto religion for some, while the rich traditions of native spirituality have been sidelined and crushed under its heel. People, animals, and all life is regarded in the same cold manner, merely receptacles of proteins and genetic code that can be exploited. The end game of this play is presented as a bleak, monochrome world expunged of spirit and light, where humans, their minds and spirits broken, are herded together and monitored like lab rats. We can see how this scenario is being expedited. The CEOs of tech companies are viewed almost as saints or Bodhisattvas, Tamas, dangling the carrot of eternal life in the form of uploading the data contained within our brains into microchips. At the same time, politicians, corporate scientists, civil servants, and economists are regarded as technocratic engineers tasked with ensuring the smooth functioning of the juggernauts of the material economy. Free will. The implicit assumption is that this will be unnecessary once the AI-powered algorithms, which know us better than we do, reach escape velocity. At this stage, human life would have no intrinsic value, and the shells of our former selves would be occupied by the demonic army that Steiner warned us was waiting for its moment. In the blood. Some people say that Rudolf Steiner predicted a vaccine would appear which would be the delivery system for the final defeat of humankind. In light of the clandestine efforts made over the last 2 years to inject almost everybody on planet Earth with a gene editing treatment, his pre-science seems remarkable. But how true is it? Amazingly, Steiner was remarkably clear by his own standards about the physical process by which this takeover would occur. In his final lecture in The Fall of the Spirits of Darkness, he states that the spiritual world, where entities such as angels, demons, and archangels dwell, is within the human blood. He meant this quite literally, and saying, both the archangels and the angels had their dwellings place in the blood. As it were, truly, the blood is not something merely for chemists to analyze. It is also the dwelling place of entities from higher worlds. To that end, he speculated that the delivery mechanism would be in the form of a vaccine injected directly into our bodies. Today, in 1917, bodies are vaccinated against one thing and the other. In future, children will be vaccinated with a substance which it will certainly be possible to produce, and this will make them immune so that they do not develop foolish inclinations connected with spiritual life. Foolish here, of course, in the eyes of the materialists. This vaccine, he goes on to say, would block off any communication from the spiritual world, meaning no messages or impulses would be able to get through from the spirits of light, whose aim is always to help humanity progress and fulfill our destiny. The vaccine would permanently lock out positive impulses which were once transmitted to us, and instead the hapless victims would only be able to receive the impulses coming to them from disruptive sources, which we can imagine today might include the media, education system, and anything else, but also technology like 5G and pulsing and targeting. He says there would be great confusion and Arimanic forces will turn people's thoughts upside down and inside out. Everything that once was good and sensible will appear evil and crazy, while everything that was once considered insane and evil will be presented as sensible and good. Boy, isn't that a big statement? I mean, what are we seeing now with all the over-sexualization and the drag queens and all this depravity and madness, you know, they're presenting it now as this is a good thing. Boy, man, this makes sense to me, you know. Squid Games from Wetiko to The Matrix. Does this sound implausible? The ramblings of a long-dead mystic. Many will no doubt say that it does, and that there are more earthly and plausible explanations for the psychic epidemic that has gripped the world. Perhaps Steiner was speaking metaphorically. After all, some may reason. Nevertheless, the phenomenon to which Steiner alluded bears striking similarities to the Native American concept of Wetiko. The author Paul Levy has written extensively about this defining it as a contagious psycho-spiritual disease of the soul, a parasite of the mind that is currently being acted out in mass on the world stage via a collective psychosis of titanic proportions. Listening to a recent Legalized Freedom podcast entitled COVID-19 War on Humanity, Emma Farrell, a plant healer who uses shamanic techniques to access inner realms, observed that she and others in the same field had seen a veritable horde of spiritual parasitic entities attached to people over the last 2 years, as if a floodgate had been opened and they had poured through it. These entities, she says, come in all shapes and sizes, but there are two very common and recognizable ones. One of which is squid-like. These squid-like beings, she said, attach themselves to unprotected people and harvest their spiritual energy by causing division and discord among us. This struck me as very interesting, as we've seen this squid archetype move into human consciousness over the past few years, not least becoming apparent through popular culture. Many people have reported having dreams of octopus or squid-like creatures, and artists such as Peter Yankowski have painted pictures of these visions. Indeed, the villainous machines that control humans and harvest their energies in the Matrix movies look like these robotic squids. If you look at the Matrix Revolutions, folks, you'll see that as well. And while one of the top Netflix series of 2021 was Squid Game, a grim and violent survival thriller that posits human nature instinctively barbaric, what's more, the resurgence in popularity of H.P. Lovecraft's supernatural tales of horror from the deep adds another tentacled layer to this cake. And let's not forget when Goldman Sachs, one of the world's largest investment banks, was memorably described by Rolling Stone journalist Matt Taibbi as a great vampire squid wrapped around the face of humanity, relentlessly jamming its blood funnel into anything that smells like money. The description is apt. After all, what is the purpose of an investment bank other than to turn every aspect of the sacred world into a monetized asset that can be traded, exploited, and leveraged? The path back to sanity. Could this manifestation of a squid octopus archetype into human consciousness be what Steiner warned us about, after they're really spiritual entities within our blood that could account for billionaire technocrats' obsession with injecting substances into us that are said to contain nanoparticles? We know very little about this. And how does this sit with the psycho-spiritual disease of Wetiko, outlined by Paul Levy, and the concept of mass formation psychosis being discussed in alternative media? Very interesting. Were people injected with these Matrix-type squid-looking machines? You know, because if we were to look right down at these little nanobots and particles that people have looked into and go into, that's kind of what they look like. If we think about it like that, just to, for a little side note, because I'll forget to mention it, there's a TV program with Liz Hayes, old casting couch Liz Hayes, in Australia. Like it's like a, you know, supposed to be like a hard hitting investigative 60 minutes type thing. It's on Sunday nights in Australia, and they've got one coming up this Sunday night about the false flag shooting in Queensland with the trains. And believe me, I saw a little bit of it. This is all about them investigating why we're so sick and why we're doing this and why we're acting like this, why we believe these crazy things and why, you know, how come we're conspiracy theorists? Why are we into this dark path and how can they fix it? What are they going to do about us? See, I knew that was going to go further, that one little event that they did with the police with the puppy dogs in Queensland and the teachers and all this, and all that false flag event on that farm. Now they're doing these big investigation shows, and they're looking at why we're all so out of our minds. And could this be the threat to Australia in the future? You know, because now we're looking at conspiracy theorists and anti-vaxxers and all these groups, they could just suddenly snap and just shoot people and kill police officers and everything. So what are we going to do about them? This is dangerous territory, folks. This is where they're going. Could this manifestation of a squid octopus type into human consciousness be what Steiner warned about? And just going over that again, the mass formation psychosis. What are we looking at, what people were injected with? The nanoparticles running around their bloodstream now? And also, what can they be attacked or pulsed with to make them think and act in a certain way? Perhaps the truth lies somewhere in the nexus of these concepts, with the implicit suggestion that we should not rest in our deep inquiry into the manner of the affliction, that is currently so prevalent across the world. Only by doing so can we hope to find the necessary tools and weapons to fight back against it. Or maybe the Ahriamanic demons that Steiner warned us about, the Wetiko mind parasites Paul Levy writes about, and the tentacled entities that have squirmed into our collective subconscious via popular culture are all about playing on the same team. If so, what does our team look like, and how do we win this game? Perhaps the fight is a necessary one at this juncture in human development. And that by defeating these spirits of darkness, we can progress to a higher level. Whatever the case, referring back to the old adage alluded to earlier, people, it's said, might go mad in crowds, but the path back to sanity happens one person at a time. So, very interesting little bits. It's only little bits just to sort of go through and cover, and things that I find interesting as we move forward. Because people were injected with something, folks, and they didn't force that, what they did, for no reason. What were people given? What is this stuff? Yeah, it is about control. It is about culling a lot of the population. It is about a lot of things. But people were given something, and this stuff is nanotech. And in a lot of ways, it isn't being addressed. And we look at what these were people were saying so long ago, and it really does connect if you look at what we were reading out with all of this. And don't forget the demons and angels and all this, they're just names. But this is interesting within the human blood, isn't it? And that Steiner was so clear on this, that these entities would dwell within human blood. Did he mean that these entities would dwell in the human blood that they always have, and that's where they hide? Or was he talking about now, that these entities would basically be injected and placed into the human blood, and that's where they would dwell? Because that would make sense to me now. You know? So were people given some form of alien technology? And what is living inside their bodies now? We are only at the start of this. But through awareness, we have steered clear from this. And I know there's a lot of people out there saying that people can shed and everything, but unless this stuff was directly injected into your bloodstream via a needle, I don't think we need to be worried. At all. But it is extremely weird. Extremely weird. That he would talk about this being injected in via vaccines, and that he would talk about demons and this in the blood and the nanotechnology here that we are seeing now. We talked in previous podcasts about information that seemed to be pointing to or alluding to that, and what I've connected is they can't kill our soul, our consciousness, because it's energy. Barry Eaton stated this when I asked him, author of Afterlife and two other books on this. And I believe that. I don't think there are any soul traps. I don't think that our actual soul can be touched. I think it's beyond all of this. But what I was saying on previous podcasts ages ago is that perhaps they've found a way to interfere here, and what they're saying in that is very interesting. This downloading that we receive, this help from the other side, this higher guardian angels or higher dimensional self or state of awareness that's constantly, you know, our intuition, this other self that's there all the time, ghosting us through our life, helping us through, giving us ideas and everything. You know, it's like we're constantly downloading from this other consciousness field. If we're a projection of consciousness out here now, then our, you know, we're always going back and to, you know, there and back. If this stuff is able to cut off that connection that we as humans have with our own consciousness, how does this work, and what is the effect when people die? Can they make it back, or is this where they're able to do the soul trap? I really don't know. I don't think so. But maybe while people are alive, they will suffer this interference here. But it is really hard to tell. Will people who have been injected live on, and will it become so inverted themselves and lose their morals and heart and feelings and soul and all of this? You know, what is going on here? What were people given? That is a pretty terrifying aspect if you look at it. But thank God I didn't get that stuff put in our family and stuff. So, I mean, I can't believe this. I'm still hearing stories about people getting their fifth boosters. Their fifth boosters, they're just going to continue to get them. It's just insane. Now, why are they getting so many? Why do they want them so much? I have had direct experience recently with people who are telling me this, that their own family members are acting like zombies, and they're just going down and getting these boosters, and they're not listening, and they seem angry about anything that's good or any comments that their people who care about them have. They're just angry about it all, and they don't seem to care anymore. They're being lured into these jabs, just jab, 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 jab. They believe in it so much. They believe in this whole system so much. They're absolutely obsessed, like cult members, to this. Something was done here, and this is all very interesting. Very, very interesting indeed. I think it's incredible, to be honest. I'll be plugging out today for Wednesday the 15th of March for the Reading and Observation podcast with Adam. It's good to be here on deck with the members. Thank you for your ongoing support and little bits extra and coffee and things like that. You guys are unbelievable, and it's great to have you on deck here. Do check the members area and the website for these podcasts. As I said, these ones are in the members area. You'll see them in the carousel spinning around there, the Reading and Observation, just under the Night Watch podcast. So look out for more of those and our guests as we move forward. And great chatting with you guys today, and we'll be back again soon. So take care, and thanks for your support, and thanks for listening.